sort of to reiterate sentiments from earlier, I know a thing or two about communicating within and beyond science. I spend a good part of every day talking to myself and to others. But you all know probably as much about this topic as I do, so let's share, all of us. How many people have had any formal training in communication? Has anyone taken a comm class? A couple people have. Yeah, it's not standard in most of our graduate programs, is what it seems like. I know I've never taken a communications class, and I wish that I had. So why should we bother communicating beyond science? Anyone have a pet reason?
To tell people what I do, so to help them understand what I do, basically.
Yeah, tell people what you do, especially perhaps if there are stakeholders, farmers, growers, to whom your research is useful. Other reasons?
Yeah, that's what I would say. I think research is absolutely pointless if you don't tell someone about it. You have to communicate it, or there's no reason to do it.
Any other thoughts? One other reason I can think of is that it helps you build your skills, and even if you feel like, well, I'm doing kind of theoretical research right now, maybe down the line you'll be doing more applied research, and so starting to build these communication skills is never going to hurt. And then the reason that for me at this exact moment in my life I found most compelling is actually exemplified in this piece in Science magazine that came out this year. So these scientists from MIT studied 11 years of Twitter data and found that lies spread faster than the truth on Twitter, which to me is just a really alarming statement about the state of kind of our communication ecosystem. And it's not something that I feel like I can single-handedly fix, but I also feel like we all have dedicated our lives in part to the pursuit of an understanding, the pursuit of knowledge, the pursuit of science, and so we better be talking about it, because if this is one of the challenges in the world, I love a good challenge, and I feel like I want to be part of a society that does better. So today's workshop, and notice I titled this workshop rather than lecture, so jump in at any time. I want to talk about sort of talks for all occasions, use of social media to communicate research, and then talking with the press. So first off, here are a couple tips about talking about your research from the AAAS Communications Toolkit. And their advice, their bottom line, is when you're communicating to any group, but especially people outside of science, start by answering the question, why should they care? Why does your research matter to them? And then following up from that, if this is a talk that you're giving rather than a conversation, think about the three-point structure. So most people in general can't absorb 100 pieces of information at once. Most of us are limited to just a couple, so help your audience out. Distill for them. What are the three things they really need to know, and can you build your talk around three things? And this might mean throwing out or not presenting some of your data, but be sure to tell people the truth. Your audience wants the truth, but they don't want the whole truth. They want the Reader's Digest truth 99% of the time. All right, so let's practice. I know I have people in my life who know that I, do something about plants, but they have no idea what that is. And it's always a challenge for me to update them about how I'm doing with that something I do about plants. So turn to the person next to you. Pretend that they're one of those people in your life, your grandma, that old person at church, whomever it is, and explain to them why they should care about what it is that you do, just in like a minute or two. Go. All right. Reining us back in. Finish whatever thought, and we'll resume in a few seconds. More time to chat in a minute. In the interests of time, I'm gonna move us along. So another piece of kind of complimentary advice that I've gotten and I think has been super helpful is to tell a story. We saw some great examples of this from people who presented earlier, sharing from their own experience in a way that tends to suck people in more than sometimes showing data or telling people a fact. For example, once upon a time, I spent the better part of a summer tying up ground beetles on little fishing wire leashes. Aren't you intrigued? Don't you want to know more? We as humans are hardwired to invest in the narratives of other people. This is why we like books. This is why we like movies. And this is why people can really like your research if they invest in it. So just think about that. Tell a story. All of our research is a story. It's the true story of us trying to discover something, and that's inherently kind of cool. Use it.
Can I ask why you were tying this? I've never seen anything like that.
I will explain that in just a few minutes. The suspense, I know, right? And then my next tip is something I learned in a playwriting class I took in college, like a crazy elective, that has actually been one of the most useful things that I've ever learned, is show, don't tell. So if you can show somebody something instead of telling it to them, that is more powerful and stickier in their brain. So for example, in this slide, would you rather be shown a slide of a picture of buttress roots or a description of what buttress roots are? Maybe it depends on the person. For a lot of people, I think the picture explains everything that is in the words. You could also show a picture and say the words, but there's actually been some cognitive research on how people process text versus speaking, and basically we read at a different speed than we understand things when people tell it to us. And so if you put buttress roots are tree roots whose upper exposed parts project from the trunk like a buttress, while people are watching that on your slide, that's happening at two different speeds, and it means that they might not remember it as well as if you'd just shown it one way or the other. So reading directly from your slides can actually make people understand less of what you're saying. Fun fact. So show, don't tell. If you, you maybe get rid of the words and make the picture twice as big as what I sometimes try to do for myself. All right. What else? What are some things that you've learned that you think really make for a great talk, either for scientific audiences or for the general public? Anyone have success stories or failure stories you want to share?
So I always love humor in communication, but for me it doesn't come naturally, so my humor is prepared humor, and I've had both success and failure in my humor in talks, where like nobody laughed for anything, like not even a smile. I'm like, come on, folks, or is it me? Like, so yeah.
Not
so
you.
But then it's at other times people have actually laughed. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's I guess like do what you're good at. So not go out of your way to do humor, but then always a sprinkle of humor is always good for a talk.
Hi. So I had a graduate seminar spring semester, last spring semester. So I was delivering my presentation just as I was explaining it to growers. I didn't think that they are all like fellow students or professors and everyone. So there were like throughout the semester there were probably 10 to 15 presentations. And I was in there, and I didn't observe that anyone asked more than 2 to 3 questions. And for my presentation, I got like 20 questions. So I answered for like 15, 20 minutes. And my advisor, he was sitting in there, and he came up to me, and he was like, I told him so many questions. What happened? He's like, they actually understood what you were talking about. So that was like, I kind of felt that maybe I was doing good. Mm-hmm. So my research actually focuses what I do for growers. Mm-hmm. It's kind of very practical. So I always like to talk more practically, like I'm talking to growers, because my ultimate focus is the benefits of the grower. Yeah.
Yeah, focusing in on the human interest dimension of whatever it is that you're doing, which is simplest and most wonderful when you're doing something really applied. Absolutely.
A lot of questions is not always a bad thing.
That too. A lot of questions is not always a bad thing, just to reiterate that comment for the record.
I tend to have trouble like narrowing things down or stripping away enough of the nuance to, encapsulate the information in like something simple enough that people really want, because it's really important to me if I'm describing something that like might work and might not work and is highly situation dependent, that comes across rather than like, oh yeah, compost is going to definitely be the right choice for you. And I really struggle with explaining that, how do you figure out whether it's right for me is an important question when you're doing applied stuff and trying to communicate science, because it's really easy to think of, to hear something exciting and just that seems to make sense and then be all in. So if anybody has tips about that or a success story with that, I would love to hear it.
That's a great question, and it's something that I struggle with too, and I think probably we all do. It's easy to say, boil your message down to 3 key points, but okay, like, what three key points when it is inherently complicated. And so, I mean, one thing to think about is, like, what key things do people most need to know? And if one of the things, if the two things are compost can work, but this uncertainty is super important, then obviously uncertainty is maybe one of your three key points. But we're going to do, I guess the other people have advice on that before I charge ahead with another suggestion.
I don't know if this applies perfectly, but I think it depends on the situation. I think that really helps. So a meeting like this is going to be very different than maybe a student seminar that you'd have back at your college. I invited everyone to a talk a few years ago, and like kind of an open, you know, poster on the wall, sort of come see Brian talk. And I had three people show up, and I was expecting like 50. Then at that moment, you can either tailor your information for those people. And it turned out that those three people were fairly knowledgeable, so I didn't have to give just 3 points. I could talk about things more in detail. So if you know your audience a little bit, that really does help. And the other thing I would say is I think people can absorb more, at least what I've seen, like across culture if you are enthusiastic with them mm-hmm. in that process. So if you have a very monotonous speech, you should definitely rely on those 3 points at the end of the talk. Reiterate them, show them again on the slide. As far as something like composting, I think at that point it really helps to have stories showing the good and the bad, maybe showing the nuances. And then if you can ever bring in something that would be like even hands-on, that's the other thing that I think is really helpful. So I would often bring to my talk literally the things I was working on and pass them around. Or if it was a chemical... I've never done that. Never mind. That's a bad example. If I've only done plants and, like, tools and that sort of thing. I was thinking, like, you could bring in, I'm trying to make it applicable to other people, like, an old chemical bottle, but then I'm pretty sure you're probably, like, illegal or something to do that. I don't know. I'm going to stop talking. But I think that helps. Making things, knowing your audience is key. Mm-hmm. And one other thought regarding that, though. If you do get in a situation where you expect 50 people to show up and you only have 3 people to show up, the flip side of that is to continue confidently in what you're saying. Don't become so fearful that then you switch your entire talk. But if you know them, then you can tailor it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, please. Go for it.
Yeah, Brian makes a really good point. Knowing your audience is really good to know or to do. Sorry, but I'm bad at it. But I also, you know, even in a, like a professional meeting like this where everybody is kind of specialized and probably knows a lot, it's also important not to assume everybody knows something because that comes across as kind of condescending and can really hurt your presentation. I think in the career development workshop that happened all day Monday, I remember a point being made that was... you know, in an interview, someone says, yeah, and obviously, as you can see in this presentation, this and this, and they, and, you know, that person certainly didn't get the job because they were, you know, it wasn't obvious to the people in the room, and he was kind of assuming. And then not related at all, but I don't know if you're going to talk about presentation tools and stuff. I mean, you have, like, a brilliant PowerPoint, and you're really good for this talk because you obviously communicate really well, but I'm terrible at PowerPoint and how, like, I just figured out this year that it's a good idea to, like, make points come up one at a time on a slide. I didn't even know you could do that until, like, 3 months ago, and I've used it a lot today because I was pretty excited about it, but that's really, like, it, you know, little tips like that. I'm not sure. Brian's going to...
No, please jump on in because I don't have like PowerPoint wizardry as part of this talk. So do it.
I've lived in a couple of different places around the world, and I'm always shocked by how the standard is always PowerPoint. But I've been in different places of the world where they've used other forms of presentation that I think are much more effective than silly PowerPoints. And so as I get older, I'm just waiting for someone to stand up or for a collective group like us to say, you know what, ASHS is going to be the new standard, and we're going to be plant scientists. That means we're really special, and we're not going to start using PowerPoint in 10 years. Like, not to say that we have to be technologically advanced or make a new program, but could we say that it's okay if you had a room of 20 people to like give a informal lecture where you're standing and sort of, and then at some point you open it for discussion, but yet there's sort of these ground rules somehow, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, that would then construct a better way of presenting information. Because I think sometimes we do feel scared with PowerPoints. And then at the end of the day, after 4 days of PowerPoints every 15 minutes, I don't care if there's 3 points or 14 or just one. I'm still not getting information because my brain can only really focus for about 30 minutes and then I'm done.
Amen. I think that's a great suggestion. I will be part of the rebellion against boring PowerPoints for whomever wants to lead us in that.
Definitely. I'm not sure if there's any fans of The Office in this room, but Dwight at one point says that PowerPoints are the peacock of the business world. And so they're not always, you know, they're not always the best thing, and they often can deter from communicating if you don't use it appropriately. Anybody else?
I do have one more comment about, or I have a book recommendation. So given that at this exact moment in time we are still constrained by PowerPoints at our horticulture meeting, there's a book called Presentation Zen that I highly recommend you check out. It does share plenty of tips that I don't have time for today about how to at least make your PowerPoint kind of engaging and fun. Yes, it's called Presentation Zen. And it's actually one of the references at the end of my talk, so you can take a picture of like a link to it later on too. I'll try to remind folks.
And this is awesome. I appreciate everybody's participation, but I don't know how much you have left, but we have
we can cut out some of the stuff at the end. But how many people like want to talk? Well, let's take a vote. We could probably go for another 20 minutes, but we could also go for another 5 minutes. How much time?
5 minutes is probably better because we want a little extra time for our business meeting too, so
perfect,
that we can like get you guys elected and stuff and talk about next year.
All right. So if that's the case, I'm going to let you guys vote. Would you rather talk about social media or talk about liaising with the press? How many people for social media? How many people for the traditional press? All right. Social media it is. Dun, dun, dun. How many people use social media already for communicating research? A couple folks do. All right, well, another thought from our helpful AAAS communication toolkit is just like a well-planned research program, public engagement with science starts with a goal. So people have probably told you, you should be using social media for your research, but what does that even mean? You know, start with a goal. What do you want to communicate? So just a couple quick examples from my life. I do pretty applied work. I have findings that farmers might want to know about, and so I've been blogging about them because that seemed like a format that wasn't too scary for me to start practicing this communication skill. And it's gone really well. People do actually read them. I actually got asked by a farmer who was writing a book if he could use some of my graphs in his book, and so it's an effective way to get things out into the world in my experience. And I also have my own website, which I was terrified to make, but it ended up not being that scary. And the reason my goal in having a website was actually that I had made a computer game about managing weeds, and I needed some place to put it. So I made a website to have a place to put my thing, but then now that I've got it, I'm like, this is great, I'm proud of my website. So here it is, I'm showing it off to you all. You too can do this for free with Weebly or WordPress or a similar thing, and then your CV is as a website and beautiful with pictures. So I'm gonna we'll come back to this maybe. Just a couple quick notes. There are some terms that you might want to look up in your future if you're curious about how to be discoverable online and you want to get into this stuff. One of them is search engine optimization. Another fun fact is that new content generation is important in how search engines pick up what to prioritize on a search listing, and also popularity factors into that too, to how discoverable your online media presence is. And my sister-in-law is a professor of communication, so I asked her about, what about visibility if you're using Facebook or Twitter to communicate your science? What kinds of things do people see, and do the algorithms that run those, that run under the hood, prioritize? And videos, GIFs, and photos, she said, posts with more comments, reactions, and shares, and so this is why sometimes people will put like a poll or something interactive in their post to try to get people to engage with it, because then more people see it. And then also, like, if people have liked stuff of yours in the past, that gets prioritized. But she also gave kind of a word of caution, which is don't waste too much time trying to optimize your social media presence for visibility. At the end of the day, the algorithms keep changing, and a lot of the information about how they work is actually quite proprietary, and people, you know, like, you need to pay to get access to that knowledge. And so just basically, just do it. If you want to communicate via social media, pick an engine or a tool that feels comfortable to you and start practicing. It's the only way to get better. Anyone have, in like a last minute, anything else you want to share about using social media to communicate science? Yes. Sure. And please correct me if I said anything wrong here, because I'm not an expert.
I didn't notice on the website. Was that an independent website, or did you make it with your university?
I made that through Weebly, which is free and quite user-friendly.
I guess my question is, the university is very proprietary. Any email we sent is their property.
Yes.
You don't use the university logo or anything. That's completely your own.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Because I was going to ask, how do you manage...
How did I get around that?
Yeah, because it's very, I think most of us don't realize, again, going back to our employees, the other side of the story is everything we do is the university's property. So I'm just wondering about, very hesitant about creating a website on their dime, because I like your game idea and I start thinking about profit, but you can't make anything if it's probably theirs. So I just wonder if you had any feedback, but you made it independently, so I guess you didn't have to worry about that.
That's correct, but it is a good point to just sort of check with your funding agency about the legalities of that kind of thing before doing stuff.
Yeah.
But
and
yeah.
The second thing I'd say is I don't use social media. My experience with social media, a lot faster to get negative than positive, and I've seen extension agents use Facebook. And the problem is the public likes to get negative, and then I've seen very bad responses by extension agents. They get into fights, and so I know I'm very hesitant, although I know my colleague Suresh Kumar uses it very effectively because he sticks to photos and videos and teaching.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, I'm very hesitant about, I think the previous commenter said let's rebel and do something new, but I actually like this old standard of, I think we should stay away from the social media stuff because, I don't know, it's too scary. Social media is all about showing you're the best, and I don't think it's the best for science, but that's my comment.
Yeah, I would like to add to his point that you guys might know Dr. Kevin Folta.
Mm-hmm.
He was a head of department of University of Florida Horticultural Sciences. Now he stepped down because of this social media. He was very criticized for talking about GMOs
mm-hmm.
on social media.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some YouTube channels, those would support him, some would fight for it, like they would abuse each other in the comment section. So it could get pretty ugly if we just choose a wrong path. But he's very kind of sturdy on what he do. So,
mm-hmm.
Like, kind of department asked him if you want to do that stuff or you want to handle the head of department position. So he said, I want to do that. I don't want to head of department. So it's like if we want to do social media, we need to be really careful what we talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's, I'm going to, I guess, fast forward to some references and recommended reading. One of these pieces up here, I don't actually remember which, had some good suggestions for how to basically respond to trolls on your social media in a way that's constructive and furthers scientific inquiry. And so that would maybe be a good thing to read up on if you're going to get into this. I think it also might depend on the kind of research. Some of our research is less controversial and maybe lends itself better. I totally respect the desire to stay off social media with science, because I do think it can be an ugly platform, or ugly platforms sometimes. But I also think that in a sort of ugly conversational climate, it's important for us to not let misinformation reign, and to bring to bear the fact that we are experts and we do have valuable and substantive and nuanced and kind things to say to each other. So I think maybe there's room for both. Mm-hmm. Sunshine stops trolls. That seems like a good note to end on as we get into the business meeting. Thank you all. You've been delightful.
Thank you so much. You know, speaking of the millennials in the room, I don't know about y'all. You know, I really like Facebook because I can stay connected because I've lived in a lot of places now, and I like my friends, and I can stay connected with you guys and stuff. But is it me, or is Facebook, like, not a thing anymore? I feel like only old people say, like, let's get on Facebook because it's going to help our business. And I'm like, no. Like, my mom has a small company, and she thinks that putting stuff on Facebook Live every week is, like, great for her, giving her all this visibility. And I'm like, Mom, there are, like, three people watching your Facebook Live videos, and we don't, you know, frankly, our generation doesn't seem to really care about that much anymore. So is that true? Do y'all see that too?
I do think that is true to a certain extent, but for people 30 and over, Facebook is still a dominant
thing.
It depends on the age bracket
that you're looking for, I guess.